You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyon SRAM. Today we are in Como.
Where are we, Lionel?
We are on the banks of the Lake Como, in Como, the shore. Yeah. In a little bar next to, it's quite busy here, isn't it? It's sort of like a mini Annecy. I was going to say earlier, Como better than Annecy?
It's a maxi Annecy, I would say. Much bigger lake.
Bigger lake,
bigger houses.
Smaller town?
Similar. Similar, okay. Maybe. Yeah, maybe it is a bit. Maybe it's a bit smaller.
It's nicer though, isn't it? I think
it feels glitzier. Definitely glitzier.
Maybe
as glitzy as Annecy is.
Not quite the height of the summer season yet, is it? So
no.
It feels quite laid
just
back.
Just up the road from George Clooney's gaff.
Lance Armstrong used to live on the top of the hill over there.
He did, in Brunate.
Seaplanes taking off and landing on the lake as well. I don't recall seeing that in Annecy. Quite an unusual sight. We saw a few unusual sights on the lake, didn't we? A guy cycling on the lake.
What was that he was on? Some kind of pedaling?
It was like a bike on water.
It wasn't a pedalo. It was a sit-up, upright bike. It had tri-bars on it as well.
But what a stage.
Amazing.
Very, very exciting stage today, I thought.
Amazing.
Fantastic stage.
Yeah.
The shark on the attack, didn't we? And yeah, really, after a very kind of slow start, this Giro has really come to the boil the last few days. But I thought today was terrific. Lots of action, lots to talk about, and a bit of a disaster for Jumbo-Visma today. But can you give us the full rundown, Lionel, the tale of the Tapa?
I can do. Yes, stage 15 from Ivrea to Como. On an ordinary day, the two breakaway riders, Dario Cataldo of Astana and the eventual stage winner, and Mattia Cattaneo of...
Hang on, that's the other way around.
No, I mean, Cataldo's a stage winner. the comma there was after... That was Dario Cataldo, comma,
right.
The stage winner, comma, and Mattia Cattaneo, comma, the runner-up, comma. Well, they were away all day. They broke clear after 14 kilometres. They had a maximum advantage of 14 minutes and something at one point, and then they were slowly reeled in, and they were almost caught and were in sight for the chasing group in the final kilometre or so, but they held on to win or to contest the sprint finish, and Cataldo got that for Astana, his first Giro stage win, his second Grand Tour stage win. He won a stage of the Vuelta a few years ago. Cattaneo didn't really have the juice to match him in the sprint finish. But right behind them came a group of Simon Yates, Hugh Carthy, Richard Carapaz and Vincenzo Nibali. And that doesn't really begin to tell the story of the day, particularly for Primoz Roglic of Jumbo-Visma, who had all sorts of trouble in the last sort of 30, 40 kilometres. He had a bike change because he had a problem with his gears. He had to ride on Antoine Tolhoek's bike. He then had a crash on the descent of the final climb where the footage was pretty dramatic, wasn't it? He was pictured hugging the barrier on the side of the road. And he's lost 40 seconds to Richard Carapaz, so he is now trailing by 47 seconds overall. And then as I was at the Jumbo-Visma bus at the finish, our Dutch colleague Dan Hakkenberg basically unearthed the fact that the reason that Roglic had to ride on Tolhoek's bike was because the team car had stopped so that the assistant sports director, Jan Boven, could answer the call of nature. I'm trying to keep it general for you.
Is this because they'd been listening to the podcast and they'd heard that Mollema had done this and they thought that that's a dumb thing now among Dutch people at the Giro? That you know, before a big effort, you have to stop to... Well, I'm not going to go into details, but...
No, it was nothing to do with that, surprisingly.
This wasn't the phase two of Operation Havasline.
Yeah.
It wasn't. Oh, very good, very good. No, it wasn't. It was, it was a mistake. It was a misjudgment. They basically thought that Roglic was going to be okay. They couldn't have foreseen that he'd have a problem with his bike. Fortunately, Tolhoek was close enough behind that he saw Roglic in the road with, swap bikes. Roglic then riding on a bike 4 millimetres smaller, apparently, and but descending, quite a tricky descent on an unfamiliar bike.
And I think the reach was the issue more than the height of the saddle. So a different, on a descent, that must have been a strange sensation for him.
Well, especially as Vincenzo Nibali was really putting the pressure on. He knows these roads very well, doesn't he? This is really his kind of territory. I said yesterday, the sort of place for an ambush. I wasn't quite anticipating this kind of thing. A bad day for Roglic and a very good day for Carapaz, who now leads by 47 seconds. And, we'll discuss what that means for the race in the first part of the podcast.
The fastest clothing in the World Tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyons RAM.
I like the bib shirt of Rafa because they're really comfortable. My name is Alberto Bettiol and I race for Team EF Education First. Yesterday I also tested in the cobbles and they are pretty good. No, I have any issue about it. So I'm looking forward to keep on riding with the chamois of Rafa. And I recommend you, all of you guys, all this bib shirt.
Thank you very much indeed to our headline sponsor, Rafa, who have supported the podcast since 2016 and enable us to cover the Giro and the other Grand Tours. Rafa have launched their Aero range of clothing, which has been developed in the wind tunnel, looking at all the things that make clothing go faster. The range includes an Aero jersey for men and women, Aero suits for men and women, and Pro Team bib shorts. These garments are exactly the same as those being worn by the EF Education First team in this Giro d'Italia. Rafa's Aero range has been developed for years to save you seconds. Check out the full range on rafa.cc. So that was a bit of noise from the finish as Cataldo sprinted to the victory, and you know it was as frenzied as that sounds. Big crowd in Como, big crowd all along the course today, really, and it's a Sunday, of course. And it was pretty chaotic there because Cataldo and Cattaneo were finishing, and as you said, Lionel, the chasers were down the finishing straight, closing pretty quickly. So there'd been a kind of frenzied rush of vehicles coming through the finish line, trying to get from between the leaders and the chasers. And the final few kilometres were, it was a frantic, frenetic finale, really, wasn't it, to today's stage. And a lot of the credit for that goes to Vincenzo Nibali, who, if you remember, a few years ago, effectively cost Stephen Kruijswijk the victory at the Giro, same team, what was then Lotto NL Jumbo, through his descending. You know, you could argue that he caused Kruijswijk to crash through just putting him under so much pressure. And again today, Roglic was on an unfamiliar bike, but the pressure that Nibali was putting on that descent was forcing people to make mistakes behind him, and it was very impressive to see. But Jumbo Visma had a bit of a nightmare, didn't they? And you were at their bus at the finish.
Yeah, and it does feel a little bit like things are unravelling for Roglic. And well, we saw in 2016 what happened to Kruijswijk in the last few days, and last year what happened to Simon Yates. Where, I mean, that wasn't an unravelling, was it? That was an implosion. But Roglic, all of a sudden, after even 2 days ago, looking rock solid, really, and you know, our kind of immediate reaction after the first big mountain stage was that he strengthened his position, and we kind of hadn't really absorbed the impact of, or the significance of, certainly Richard Carapaz's gains on the first of these four tricky days. And really, he's kind of held it together okay the last couple of days, and then today, well, one thing after another went wrong for him, and it's starting to look like the Giro's getting away from him. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, as I sort of said last night, I felt that he was in a weak position. He was facing a two-pronged challenge from Movistar with Landa and Carapaz, and Landa's really had a couple of days to recover. The isolation is not just a tactical thing. Today it did have an impact because it meant there was no teammate next to him immediately to give him their bike, but it's also a psychological thing. It's just a sort of an unsettling effect of not having a teammate with you. And I think that, you know, if you count up the number of days when he will have been under pressure, when we get to the Giro, when he will have been isolated, and you know, it will almost be in double figures. And I think you can probably withstand that kind of pressure and that stress, and also the sort of imponderables that may occur, crashes, punctures, or whatever. You can get away with that, you know, maybe once or twice, but sooner or later you're going to come a cropper, and he did today.
I think the team aspect is really interesting now, because it's a race where we saw today how important team support is, and today is just the sort of stage where it was vital to have bodies around him. And of course he's missing Laurence Dupluis and Robert Hessink through no fault of his own. Don't look so guilty, Lionel. I'm sure Laurence Dupluis would have fallen ill anyway. But there are other riders on that team who you think, you know, if you want to win one Grand Tour in the season, which would make a really, that would be a huge, huge achievement, why isn't Kruiswijk here supporting him? Why isn't Tony Martin here? Wout van Aert, you know, I mean, okay, Wout van Aert's done a heavy classics campaign, but they've got some, Tony Martin, you know, they've got some really strong riders who are not here at this race, because they're dividing the resources between the Giro and the Tour de France. But they're not going to, with all due respect to Kruiswijk, I think they're going to go to the Tour de France and challenge to win the Tour with Kruiswijk. So why not put all your focus into trying to win one Grand Tour? And imagine Roglic here with that kind of support. Would that have made a difference today?
I think the, as a counterpoint to that, I would say that the Tour is much, much more important for a Dutch sponsor. You know, we see the Dutch crowds every year. And to me, it's more of a surprise that Roglic has come here aiming to win the race rather than going to the Tour de France, you know, with Kruiswijk, like they were last year, in an alliance, which would give him a good chance, I think. I'm quite surprised that he decided to do the Giro. Would Tony Martin have made a difference today? Wout van Aert,
I'm just experienced. I mean, I spoke to Sepp Kuss at the finish. You know, there's a hell of a lot of pressure on Sepp Kuss, Bowman and Tolhoek. Three really talented young climbers, but really inexperienced. And he said one of the things about being young and inexperienced is they have good days and bad days. You know, and when they're good, they're really good, but they will have bad days as well. And there's a lot of pressure and responsibility on that.
And to go back to what I was saying yesterday about the way these 4 days have really set the race up to shake people up and put people outside of the comfort zone, we've gone from tempo type climbing, where what Roglic would have ideally liked is strength in depth on the final climb to ride a good tempo and just keep things under control and, you know, squeeze gaps down for him so he doesn't have to do any of that work. And today, really a kind of classics course where it's about not just the climbing, but the descending, the cornering, the positioning, the fact that the race was in, you know, it was in single file for long, long periods of time. And that's when everyone's on the limit. The stress is high, not just physically, but mentally. And the young riders are still getting to grips with that kind of riding. And it's a real change of rhythm from one day to the next. And it's caught them out a bit today, but it's caught the team out more than that. And the sports directors should have had the experience not make what is going to look,
or the bladders,
it's going to look like a pretty bad mistake, I think, you know, if things continue to go south for Roglic. I mean, everyone has to answer the call of nature at some point. It's one of the occupational hazards of the Grand Tours, is that the sports directors are sat in the car for hours and hours, and usually you would think that before you get to 50k to go, you would have stopped and sorted it out. But we don't know what was going on in that earlier phase of the race. And if you think, oh, I can get through, and then suddenly you can't get through. I mean, we were discussing it as we came back from the team buses to the press room, and Ciro said, well, you just have to go in a bidon, as simple as that. We'll keep the car moving. I mean,
you can hold off going to the bathroom for half an hour.
Well,
I don't know how desperate you are.
Not if you've already been desperate for half an hour.
The problem in a team car is that on a stage like today, almost six hours, the cars have got to stop at some point for a call of nature. Now, the problem is you can't plan that, really. you've got to find the right spot. They could have been looking for a place to stop for an hour, you know, before they had an opportunity to stop. Who knows?
As I understand it, they felt that they'd given, you know, Roglic his last feed and everything was fine and okay. And, you know, it's a couple of minutes by the side of the road and we'll be back up to you. They couldn't have known that he would had a problem with his bike. Let's hear from a few of the people. The way this kind of all emerged was such that when Jan Boven, who we gather had to answer the call of nature,
of course, been a real theme of this Giro,
and the Giro for the last few years, unfortunately.
He was in the passenger seat, and Addy Engels was driving. So they're the two sports directors. But when they basically came back to the team bus after the finish, you know, this story hadn't really kind of broken, it hadn't erupted, it hadn't been unleashed at this point. So let's hear first from Jan Boven and then from Addy Engels and then from Antoine Tolhoek about giving the bike to Primoz Roglic, and finally from our Dutch colleague Dan Hakkenberg, who kind of pieced together the whole situation and explains, as to the best of his knowledge, what actually happened out on the road. Jan, first of all, can you tell me why Roglic was on Antoine Tolhoek's bike?
It was a little bit hectic on the downhills. He crashed, I think, there maybe. Yeah, there was some problem with the bike. Antoine was coming back. It was a little bit big mess with the cars behind. Antoine was faster. He took the bike and it was so fast. We decided not to change anymore and he continued on the bike of Antoine.
There was just no opportunity to change bikes?
No, after there it was not possible. It was so fast, always small roads. It was better to stay on the bike of Antoine in that moment.
Is the bike a little bit small for him, a little bit big?
It's not a big change. It's 4 millimeters lower, the bike of Antoine. That's pretty similar. We know it also. That was for the situation okay.
And what happened with Roglic's fall?
I don't know. I can tell you.
But 40 seconds lost today?
Yeah, it's a big miss. It's not nice. I mean, we continue for 1 week, but that's not a nice situation in a day like this.
Addy, how difficult is it to descend full gas on somebody else's bike?
I don't know. I mean, in terms of position, they don't change too much. That's really a question for Primoz, of course. I mean, luckily, like I said, the positions, they are more or less quite the same. So in that way, it shouldn't differ too much. I think for sure the chasing to get back on the group after the bike switch costs energy, and of course a lot of things it delivers stress in into your head, and I think in the end that energy and also the mental energy that it takes maybe were the reason why he wasn't able to follow on the climb, and then in the descent he was not far behind, so of course you risk a little bit more, and sometimes I don't know, I haven't spoken to Primoz, but so it looks like then you risk a bit too much.
Does it feel like one of those days where one thing goes wrong and then another thing goes wrong?
Totally. I mean, it's one of those days where things go wrong, and then together with really bad luck in terms of timing and stuff, things come together and then you lose more than you want.
But do you think, 40 seconds, not great, but are you also thinking, well, it could have been worse?
For sure it could have been worse. I mean, he could have stayed on the road after the crash. It could have been over. And looking to that, I think on one way, of course, 40 seconds on a day like this is a lot. On the other hand, it's only 40 seconds. It could have been a lot worse. And we're still in the game, although we lose today. And now we have to get through the rest day the best way possible. And hopefully there aren't the injuries are not too bad, and we can continue the fight in the last week.
I don't know exactly what was happened. I just came back at the front group and I saw Primoz was standing there with bike problems, so we swapped the bike and he could continue fast, luckily with my bike. So I don't know, it was not possible to pedal anymore with it because the derailleur was off the bike, so he was really necessary that he needs to change the bike. So
Dan, run me through what has happened with Jumbo Visma, because they've had a bit of a disaster this afternoon.
It was a what we call an unlucky day. We spoke to the sportive directors of the team, and Adi Egels told us that after the descent of the Sarmano, they got on the flat part besides the lake. They gave Roglic some extra bottles, but they had to take a piss. So they stopped the car on the right-hand side, even, they say, took a piss, and then on the radio they heard that Roglic got into a mechanical problem. Roglic himself told us that his front changer, his derailleur, was broken. Antoine Tolhoek, his teammate, was just about to close the gap, so he was there first because the sportive directors were not able to hand him his spare bike. So that's the first bike change. Then they went up the final climb. Roglic had to push to get back on the front group on the bike of Antoine Tolhoek, and then, well, everybody could see what happened over there on the telly.
So why did Adi Engels admit that they'd stopped? He didn't need to say that.
Is this the new transparency, maybe? Talking openly about urine. No, I don't know, but if they had to take a piss. It was quite simple. And if it goes well, nobody bothers. This is what happens in bike racing. Somehow it's like Cruyff used to say about football. It's about making mistakes.
So there we are. By tomorrow morning, maybe the details of this will have firmed up a bit. But it's as Dan Hakkenberg said there, as Johan Cruyff used to say, it's a game decided by mistakes. And that was a mistake that contributed to Roglic conceding 40 seconds, having to descend on an unfamiliar bike and losing control on a relatively benign corner. A mistake that was really the result of being put under pressure by Vincenzo Nibali, chiefly.
If it's any consolation to them, and I don't think it will be, I think Roglic will not win this Giro d'Italia because of his form dwindling, because his form, I think, is dwindling. There's no way that a guy who won the prologue won the opening time trial by the margin he did on a climb like the San Luca, if that was still the sort of status quo, the balance of power, he would be going with the best guys and following attacks on a climb like the Civiglia. There is no doubt about that. He couldn't follow those climbs. So did he have a bad day? Well, I think yesterday he was already not defending, on the defensive, but he certainly wasn't the rider that we saw at the start of the Giro. And that would worry me most of all if I was at Jumbo-Visma.
I agree completely. I think there are just little signs that he's not in the sort of form that he's been in all year and for so long. He's just not quite on top of it in the way that he appeared to be.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of race radio at the Tour de France, to remind us to tell you that this episode of our Giro coverage is sponsored by Harry's Razors. Now, Rich, I don't want to be too personal here, but have you forgotten to pack your Harry's Razor for this stretch of the Giro?
No, Lionel, I have not. I am looking a little bit scruffy, I will grant you that. Tomorrow's a rest day, of course, and perfect day for a nice shave, and it's been a long time coming. Fortunately, I got my latest consignment of Harry's Razors in the post just before I came, because I get the razor blades sent to me when I need them. They anticipate when I need them, and I get them sent to me. So I've got some lovely, sharp razor blades. Now, you, if you're a Cycling Podcast listener, can get a trial set of Harry's razors for just £3.95. All you have to do is go to harrys.com/cycling. In the trial set, you get the weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and travel blade cover. And then you, with that kit, you can look as, your face can look as smooth as mine will tomorrow mid-morning, let's say. Once I've got up on the rest day. So, and not run Lionel to the airport.
Oh, harsh. Am I going to be left to fend for myself?
I think we agreed on a taxi, Lionel. So claim your Harry's trial set for just £3.95 and support the Cycling Podcast. To get your trial set delivered to you, including the razor handle, the 5-blade cartridge, the foaming shave gel, and the travel blade cover, go to harrys.com/cycling right now. That's harrys.com/cycling. Well, the ride of the day, apart from Dario Cataldo, was probably Vincenzo Nibali, or undoubtedly Vincenzo Nibali. This is his, it's not his backyard, but he knows these roads very well. He's won Il Lombardia twice, and
he trains on these roads. He lives just up the road.
Right. Okay, of course. Yeah. So he, yeah, so he, but they're perfect for him. They're quite technical descents, short climbs, technical descents, really made for aggressive racing. And as you said earlier in the Giro, Daniel, he's an aggressive looking rider. You know, Nibali's dynamic on the bike, and he looks always poised to attack. And we saw Nibali really at his best, I think, today. And you know, it sets up a really intriguing final week, because I think Carapaz, his first day in the pink jersey, also looked. We'll talk about Carapaz in the final part, and we'll hear a bit more about cycling in Ecuador as well. But I think Carapaz, his inexperience told at certain points today, when his team sort of melted away and he found himself on the front working quite hard. I didn't really know what for, and I don't know, he is very inexperienced, and Nibali is just the sort of rider who might be able to exploit that.
Well, Nibali is a minute behind Roglic, and if Carapaz wasn't in the picture, you would say Nibali would be the really warm favourite going into tomorrow's rest day, especially with all the climbing still to come, and him very much on an upward trajectory, and Roglic on the downward. Carapaz is the big unknown, really. But what Nibali has in his favour is just that staying power and that determination. I mean, you know, he was playing for seconds really today, and would have known that he's not going to crack everyone and take back, you know, a minute or a minute and a half here. Nevertheless, he put absolutely everything on the line to try and make some gains, because he, with his level of experience, he'll know that momentum does matter. He'll go into the rest day now, probably with his tail up, thinking, let's bring it on Tuesday and see what we can do, and see if we can maybe put Carapaz under a bit of pressure, maybe put Roglic under the sort of pressure that will cause him to crack completely, and then he's gained another place, and before you know it, the Jaws music is playing, and Nibali is starting to look
blood
and sound,
in the water.
Yeah, sound ominous.
Well, I spoke at the finish to Nibali's Barry Merida teammate Domenico Pozzovivo, who was also very prominent today and is going to be a really useful ally for Nibali. I mean, a year ago, Pozzovivo was a contender to win the race in the final week, if you'll recall. Very strong rider in the mountains. So here's what Pozzovivo said at the finish.
Good day for your leader, Vincenzo, today. I guess this is a stage that he looked at and thought would suit him down to the ground.
Yeah, it was the final like Lombardia, so Vincenzo always did a great performance on this race, and also today make some difference with the other GC guys. I'm happy to help him to this.
Is he confident that he can win this Giro still?
Yes, we are confident, because he has still a very good feeling, and the last week is very hard.
And what did you make of Carapaz today, his first day in pink? He's not got as much experience as Vincenzo, obviously. What did you make of his performance today?
I think Carapaz is very strong now, even if it's not a great experience. Also last year was in top five, so he's a great contender.
So that was Domenico Pozzovivo. And as you've said, Lionel, we know that Nibali tends to get, if not better, then less weak than the others in week three, and every stage is an opportunity for him really to, and it's not so much even about gaining seconds, it's more about, you know, breaking his opponents, as you could argue he did a little bit today with Roglic. You know, Rude Roglic have made that mistake or crashed without the pressure being put on by Nibali, and similarly Carapaz, you know, with the inexperience that he has, Nibali can play with him a little bit.
I'm speaking to Nibali's mind coach tomorrow.
You are speaking?
To his mind coach.
Tonight?
No, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, he says, just give me a call whenever you want. I think he's playing mind games with me. I don't think he'll pick up.
I'm not sure he needs to play mind games with you.
Why?
Daniel. I don't know. I mean, maybe you'd not respond to mind games. You wouldn't buckle under the pressure of mind games. Or maybe,
sure,
maybe he doesn't.
Referring.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't think he would need to play mind games with you. I don't know. But Roglic, the thing for Roglic is how long ago now the Tour of Romandy starts to feel. Whereas Nibali, you know, he's come into this race, there's not been, you look at the first part of Nibali's season and you don't say, well, there's a potential Grand Tour champion. You look at him thinking he's, you know, he's getting a bit long in the tooth. But all of a sudden, you know, he's right back in contention, and having Pozzovivo as well. And he's Pozzovivo isn't the only one in that team, is it? That can do some
Caruso was
Caruso
fantastic.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's a couple of really valuable allies, and you wonder how much would Roglic pay to have one of those on the side in this final week?
Literally.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, I don't know.
It'd be an unusual move for him to get the checkbook out for Caruso, wouldn't it?
That's a question for the press conference. That'd be a turn up for the books.
€100,000 maybe for somebody.
I wonder if it's ever happened. It must have happened that somebody's enlisted the help of a rival's teammate.
All sorts of stories about the tour in the 80s and the TI Rally team having signed people for the following season who were their, you know, biggest opponents. What? You know, deals would get done during the tour on the rest day and suddenly the guy would stop attacking. I'd have to look back at some of my interviews with a certain Irish rider to before I made any specific allegations with names attached to them. But
we're not suggesting anything like that at all. No. Daniel, who were you speaking to at the finish?
Another rider who had a pretty good day was Simon Yates. He is very much, I think, on an upward curve. His Giro has followed a strange sort of bell curve kind of pattern. Came in all guns blazing, or at least that's what we heard. At least verbally, all guns were blazing. His quotes in the opening press conference made quite a lot of noise, didn't they? Anyway, Yates seems to be on the way back. He was better again today, and I spoke to Simon Yates and his direct sportif Matt White after the finish. So Simon, it looked as though today was a bit better than yesterday, which was a bit better than the day before, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I might win the TT at the end. No, I'm going in the right direction. Sensations are getting better. I don't know what else to say. I think when the race really kicked off there, I was still not really with Nibali then. But, like you say, I'm getting there. So, good signs.
And the legs are just feeling kind of smoother and lighter and more like they were at the start of the Giro?
They're just working now rather than not working. So, I'm just able to... I think also the last the days before, I wasn't able to go over my limit and really recover. Like, once I went over, that was kind of it. I was kind of there. But now I'm able to go over it and sort of, you know, race normally, which is obviously making a big difference when you're making those accelerations or someone starts riding or whatever.
Is it much too early to sort of come up with any theory about why it happened on those couple of days?
Your guess is as good as mine. I'm still searching for an answer. We don't know yet either if it's just I've just had a good couple of days here, or better couple of days, I should say, and then actually next few days, rest day tomorrow, of course, but... next week, we'll see what happens there.
Oh, 100% we were looking for the stage win. And it didn't work out. It was close. You know, we committed, we tried, and it was a close one, exciting stage. And for us, Simon's is getting better. You can clearly see that. But the team did a very good job giving him the opportunity to try to win a stage.
Was there one point in the day where you kind of got frustrated with the other teams and directors thinking 12, 14 minutes, this is too much now?
No, I don't really care what they do. I do my race, they can do their own. The stage wins for everyone. So we ran our race, and there was opportunities for other teams to come and join us. They chose not to. That's their prerogative, mate.
I said you were looking at a stage win, but you are still very much committed to staying in the GC with Simon, aren't you?
100%, but I think this late in the race and on the selective stages, you can see the cream is rising to the top. And so I think we can still win a stage here and climb our way up the GC. Where to? Who knows?
And just on next week, Matt, I mean, the Gavi's gone, but that's not necessarily going to make that day easier or less aggressive or less conducive to big attacks, is it?
My call is it'll be a more aggressive day because the Gavi is not in there. So we're replacing two climbs with one. The Gavi is such a solid, long climb, you can't be aggressive on the Gavi. With the two smaller climbs, I think it'll be more aggressive. It's only 800 metres less of climbing in total for the day, which still takes it to maybe 4,800 metres of climbing. So it's not necessarily an easier day. And the reason why they've probably cancelled it is bad weather is expected, as in rain, which makes adds another dimension as well. So look, we've got some exciting racing to come, and this Giro, as you've seen, is far, far, far from over.
So it was Simon Yates and Matt White, and Simon Yates, certainly you get the sense that he's just going to keep giving it a go, isn't he?
Yeah, and they're definitely committed to pursuing this, well, the general classification. They see great value in him, just sort of remaining focused and maybe even finishing fifth or sixth or seventh, but they see that as a stepping stone in his development, as opposed to last year when he completely fell out of the general classification. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to watch Mitchelton over the next few days. I mean, I think there are some good opportunities for him next year. Next week. Interesting as well to hear Matt White talk about the change to the Gavia stage, making it potentially more exciting, harder. I would tend to subscribe to that as well.
Interesting, Matt White this morning mentioned in passing that Team Ineos, he was sort of speculating on whether Egan Bernal had been here. He reckons they wouldn't have had a team to really support him in the race. I mean, obviously, Pavel Sivakov is riding very well. They've lost Theo Gegenhardt. But, you know, he wonders whether, if Bernal had been here and riding well, whether he would have had the sort of strong team that he would have needed to defend the jersey. Another British rider who rode extremely well today was Hugh Carthy. He attacked on that final climb and was caught just going over the top by Nibali and Carapaz and came in with them to the finish. I grabbed a quick word with him at the finish. We'll just hear the very start to interview, because I'm loving Hugh Carthy's understated interviews, and he's completely unaffected by being here and riding pretty well at the Giro. So here's Hugh Carthy at the finish.
You must have been pleased with your performance out there. Very aggressive ride.
Yeah, it was all right. Yeah.
I spoke to Hugh Carthy in Pinerolo a couple of days ago when he was in the white jersey. He'd ridden extremely well on stage 12. Although he lost a little bit of ground on the final climb in the final 500 metres, lost a few seconds, but held that, you know, over the top and on the descent and the run-in, and was in the white jersey, ahead of Miguel Angel Lopez, of course.
Spider-Man.
Sorry. Crikey, chaps, wake up. So I had quite a chat with him, and he was saying how riding like that, being in the company that he was with, it's confidence boosting, and it made him feel like, you know, he was in the race, part of the race. We then didn't play that interview because that day you lost 8.5 minutes to...
We're so fickle, aren't we?
Well, the race was so incredible that we, you know, there was no room for that. But to see him kind of dig in these last couple of days and ride so well, particularly today, and he was in good shape yesterday as well, wasn't he?
I kind of like the way that EF Education First are riding, where they're not protecting any rider, but Tanel Kangert, Joe Dombrowski and Hugh Carthy are all just being allowed to do what they like.
They got it wrong today though, didn't they? Today was a great opportunity for a stage win for a lot of teams, and they're a team whose main goal for the rest of the Giro is a stage win. And
who could they have put up in that break?
No, they shouldn't have been thinking about a break. They should have been thinking about chasing it back with more vigour, more gusto. Mitchelton Scott were the ones who did most of the work at the key points, it seemed to me. And then for Hugh Carthy to sort of go off on the Chiviglio to try to attack, I mean, it was a bit belated at that point. It was a bit after the Lord Mayor's show, wasn't it?
It's hard though to say, can you bring it all back in for me, and then and just not have the certainty.
But one man would have made... I mean, what was the difference in the end? What did Cataldo and Cataneo stay away?
It's 11 seconds.
11 seconds. So, you know, just one more man up there from, you know, a couple of other teams would have made all the difference.
It would have done, that's true. But, you know, it's easy to say in hindsight, isn't it?
Everything's easy to say in hindsight, Lionel.
Dombrowski crashed pretty hard today. He's been riding well. He's still 15th overall. He got back up and into the group. I spoke to him at the finish. Here's what he said about the crash.
Take a tumble.
Yeah.
But you obviously got back up pretty quickly.
Yeah, I tried to. Wasn't really the best time.
What happened in the crash?
I don't know. I just grabbed my bottle and then I was on the ground. I don't know if I hit a hole with my front wheel or what, but we changed the bike, and I made it back just before the bottom, but and I wasn't feeling so good, so I was didn't hold on too long.
Did you come down the same crash as Roglic?
I don't know. I was definitely the first one to crash, and I don't know if anyone else was involved, but yeah.
But you're not, you done your elbow and your shoulder by the looks of things.
Yeah, I think I'm a bit torn up, but not too bad.
Rest day tomorrow.
Yeah.
The Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off all your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25. And if you share the Cycling Podcast Instagram post, if you make it your Instagram story, then you stand a chance of winning a Science and Sport bundle with some Rafa kit as well. So share the Science and Sport posts about this tonight's podcast on your Instagram story, and you'll go into our the big hat from which we will draw a lucky name.
A big hat? Have we got a big hat?
A hat. Yeah.
Small a digital hat.
A small hat.
You guys will be doing the press conference tomorrow. Keep the questions coming. This is really your last chance to send us a question. If you could send us a question tonight, you might have a chance of making the cut. I would just say, if you've sent a question in before and it's not been answered, don't take that as, you know, don't be discouraged. We get loads of questions, and you know, we have to select the ones that we can answer, basically. Send us a voice message to our WhatsApp number, which is +44 797 133 8205. Any questions about the Giro, Daniel and Richard will be happy to answer tomorrow.
Indeed. Little update on the mugs. Stacey Snyder's mugs being sold for two good causes, Ride for Charlie and the Kelly Catlin Fund. They sold out today within minutes of going on sale. That's the final batch for the Giro, unfortunately, but there'll be more mugs at the Tour de France and then at the Vuelta. And I hope, I'm maybe speaking prematurely here, but I hope that we can repeat it next year. You know, Stacey Snyder's been a friend of the podcast for a few years. Hopefully we can retain her friendship into next year, and she'll do the same again. Because they've proved very popular, and they've raised quite a lot of money for these two good causes. So that's great. We'll select another good cause for the Tour de France, another one for the Vuelta. So, listen, finally, today, Richard Carapaz, first day in the pink jersey. What did you make of him, Daniel? Did we learn anything today about Carapaz's prospects of winning?
Well, he looks solid, doesn't he? The doubt, I suppose, is next week, the third week. He's a young guy, relatively inexperienced, but in his Grand Tour so far, his third week's always been pretty good. It was good last week, last year at the Giro, and it's looking pretty encouraging for them. They've got Landa sort of waiting in the wings, so I don't really see too many signs, too many causes for concern for Movistar.
You're right, it was stage 19, wasn't it, last year, where he and Lopez really leapfrogged a lot of people on the stage that Chris Froome won. He rode really well that day, and yeah, a lot of people wilted over those final couple of days. So the signs are good for Carapaz. He's from Ecuador, of course.
Yeah, I think if Carapaz gets through Tuesday's stage in good nick and doesn't concede any ground, possibly even adds to his advantage, who knows? The question will start, the inevitable question will be, what's his time trialing going to be like? Remember last year, the Trento to Rovereto time trial, what was the course for that like?
It was pretty flat.
It was pretty flat, yeah. And he was 52nd in that, which dropped him from 6th overall to 9th overall. And then, as you say, Rich, he clawed himself back up to 4th overall with two very, very good days, Bardonecchia and Chavinia. This year's time trialing has been solid. He was good on the climb, wasn't he, in Bologna. Finished 14th there, and then he was 11th in San Marino, which again, you know, he wasn't quite as fully on the radar then as he is now. But some of the people who beat him, you know, Pello Bilbao, Hugh Carthy, Bob Jungels, Chad Hager, Tanel Kangert, Nibali, of course, and Roglic. The final time trial in Verona will be one of those ones where it's all about the recovery, all about how the legs respond to the previous 3 weeks rather than a pure test of actual kind of straight out of the blocks time trialing ability. But I think if he gets through Tuesday, we're going to be starting to think of Carapaz as very strongly as a potential Giro champion here, aren't we?
Well, I mentioned he was from Ecuador. We don't know an awful lot about cycling in Ecuador, so we went to try and find out a little bit this morning from the two other Ecuadorians in the race, Jonathan Narvaez from Team Ineos and Jonathan Caicedo, is that their
Caicedo, yeah.
Caicedo of EF Education First. Fair to say, these riders are not they're not the same as Carapaz in their abilities. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but they're different types of rider. Narvaez is more of an all-rounder. He can get up short climbs, but he can sprint as well. Both are a bit bigger than Carapaz. They're not pure climbers that he is. So that was interesting. But we spoke to both of them, and we also spoke to Javier Arteche, the coach at Team Ineos, who has a special responsibility for the Spanish-speaking riders, including the South Americans at that team. So we hear first from Jonathan Narvaez from Team Ineos, then from Jonathan Caicedo from EF Education First, and then from Javier Arteche from Team Ineos.
Can you tell me anything about cycling in Ecuador? What is the cycling scene like in your home country?
I think now for sure the fans enjoy a lot the victory of Richard yesterday. I think the cycling is not too big in Ecuador, but now with three guys world touring the Giro, the people get starting to think about more, no? And I am happy for Richard, happy for Ecuador, and I think he will do a good Giro in the end.
How did you get into cycling when you were young? Did you see it on TV or did you see local races?
I started to see cycling on TV. I remember in 2011 Tour de France, and I start my brother start first, and then I start to get the cycling.
And who would you support, because there were no Ecuadorian riders then? So what's the relationship with Colombian riders, for example?
I live close to Colombia, so in the border from Colombia, and Colombia have a lot of cyclists also, and in the border there is so many races, so many fans, so many interesting about the cycling, and so it was I think it's a little bit easy starting cycling.
And what is there much media coverage of you and Richard and other Ecuadorian cyclists who've come to Europe in the media in Ecuador?
There is around three or four guys. Now they get more strong for to come in the World Tour, but I don't know at the moment.
And is there a Vuelta at Ecuador? Is there are there some big races that you've competed in there?
I think before yesterday, just nothing. No, the government they don't put so much interesting in to make races in Ecuador or the Tour of Ecuador or something like this. But now, I don't know.
Do you think Richard will become one of the biggest sports people in Ecuador because of having the pink jersey here?
Yeah, for sure. In the social media, what they can see in the social media, he's so famous now. But yeah, he will is a big guy in Ecuador now.
I think it's a great source of pride for the whole country. I'm really happy for him. He's always been a very ambitious rider and he really deserves this. I think all the fans in Ecuador must be thrilled. There's a lot of interest in the Giro now and we can really sense that the country is behind us. Richard and I are both from the province of Carchi and it's a great place. It's very high. The majority of it is 2,800 meters above sea level. The landscape is beautiful and there are a lot of roads to train on. I think we get some of our strength from nature and from the land we grew up on. It's a dream for us to be here at the Giro, and I just hope it goes well for Richard. The people of Carchi are warriors, they're charismatic, and we're seeing that here with Richard. I think that he's very determined, very focused, and I have a lot of faith in him. He'll fight to the end. I wish him the best of luck.
Three Ecuadorians in the race, one of them leading the race. I mean, is the cycling scene there... Has it been developing over the last few years?
Yeah, I think it's developing, but there's no really big cycling culture yet. When they are young, they always go to Colombia to race. Since they are junior riders, even younger than junior riders, they used to go to Colombia because they don't have a lot of cycling races calendar. So they go to Colombia, and you can see in the best Colombian races a couple of Ecuadorians. No, so all of them. Carapaz was a really good. He had a really good victories in junior and under 23 category in Colombia before coming to Spain to another under 23 to Lizarte development team, and same for Narváez, same for Caicedo. So, but I think now with them in the World Tour level. What they say is, it's improving, but they have still a lot of work to do, and you still cannot compare with Colombia.
So that was Narváez, Caicedo and Artecha. And interesting little insight into cycling in Ecuador there. And there isn't, obviously, a scene there to rival that in Colombia. And it seems that the good Ecuadorian riders have to go to Colombia in order to race. Artecha also told me that, you know, the level of organization in Ecuador is really almost non-existent in terms of federation and so on. So the riders that emerge tend to do so through Colombian racing. But it's an interesting phenomenon, and no doubt if Carapaz wins or does well in the Giro, he'll be, famous in Ecuador, I guess.
More famous than Julian Assange, maybe.
Exactly.
Is Assange famous in Ecuador?
Well, I don't know. He's lived in their embassy for how many years?
Seven years.
He was in there before Bradley Wiggins won the Tour de France, I think.
That's what helped put it in perspective for me. Yeah.
I know how long he's been in there because the day when he went in was the day when we ceased to have the same hairdresser.
You know that he's not in there anymore, though.
He's not. James. No, he's not.
So a whole other subject. Anyway. We should wrap things up, and we should also say farewell to Lionel.
Oh, farewell, Richard. Farewell,
you're
Daniel.
Leaving us tomorrow.
Farewell, yeah, my Giro
good
is
shift,
over,
Lionel.
I mean, yeah, I'll
just
be
when
watching.
It just when it started to get interesting, you're off. Well, thank you very much, Lionel, for being a stalwart of this Giro so far.
Oh, that was hard work,
well
for you, wasn't it?
Well
thanks,
done.
Thanks, Rich. Thank you.
Well done. You leave with our good wishes.
Well, have a good week.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Daniel.